You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Monday, so that means it's David Shapiro, and this is Shapiro World, and this podcast is proudly brought to you by sharenet.co.za. So many things to talk about at the moment, David, in this short week. We've got results coming out from EOH and Clicks and Zeta, and we've also got CPI inflation, and we've also got retail sales numbers coming out on Thursday. And I see all this renewed enthusiasm for SA domestic stocks, and I don't want to be a party pooper. Yeah. Or a dampener of sentiment. But I just can't see it. I can't see why people are enthusiastic.
No, I think you're right. And I think today is really supporting what you're claiming, because today retailers are coming under a bit of pressure. The miners have been under pressure as well. And yeah, there are a few odd stocks that have gone better for reasons that we can't establish. Banks have picked up. But overall, Lindsay, if you haven't got any growth in an economy, if there's no top line growth, eventually the market will come down. And we're out of step. That doesn't mean the rest of the world's going to come down, I think, but we're out of step with the rest of the world, and it's bound to, you know, it's bound to reflect on our market. I can't get enthusiastic about it. You know, Lindsay, you know what I'm missing? I don't know what the institutions are doing and if they are doing anything. And I put myself in a position there. I suppose if you're getting money keeps coming in, and every month it comes in because you run pension funds, or you, or there's forced savings that will find their way into your business or into your funds, I suppose you've got to keep buying. But where do you keep buying? You can put 30% of that offshore. Sure, that's okay. And you can put a little bit in cash and everything. But eventually, I suppose, your equity portfolio, you have to keep adding. And there might be some support for that. But I mean, on fundamentals, I don't think there's a justifiable case. And what concerns me is that when we compare some of the results with where these shares are trading, I'm talking the multiples, there's certainly a disconnect. You know, there's certainly, I think our market is relatively expensive. So we've been kept up to date. You know, we've been kept up now by some of the large offshore traders, which have done well and are holding us up. But SA Inc., I'm on your side. It scares me, and I still do not have the appetite to come in. There's nothing that attracts me here, you know, into this market.
The EOH story was a good one, and I mentioned EOH because their results were out this week, and they came out with a trading statement, and the share price up at the moment close to 20%. It was a good fire sale that they had, and they said, we've done this, we've done that, and they let the market know. Mr. Fancola, who used to be at ABSA, and I've done some work with media work with him, and he's a good chap. I think that it's not going to go back to 170 a share, but this is maybe a maybe a 15 to 20 rand stock, as opposed to 9 rand when the trading update came out.
Possibly. You know, what has to establish now, when I think about it now, what needs to be established now is that he's fundamentally, Fancola's written off the assets.
Yes.
And he's written off goodwills, he's written off intangibles of all the businesses that they bought, issued shares against, or certainly issued some cash. Those people, the people who received those shares and received they received the cash, they're lucky. But I think that those businesses have fundamentally been written down to nothing. How do you establish a value for EOH? We can only do that over time, where money is made, where the revenue is produced and profits are produced. Because a value of a company is the present value. In other words, it's today's value of future earnings. That's how you value a company, in perpetuity. You know, that's so how long is a company going to be around? Bring it back to today's value, those earnings. And we don't know what those earnings are going to be. And we don't know how secure those earnings are going to be. So once we get a steady stream of earnings that are sustainable, then we can eventually work out whether this is a viable business. But at this stage, I think people are just speculating and having punts, saying, you know, it's been written off. There still is some value underneath it. Let's go for it. He did mention a 8 billion rand revenue stream, I think, in the trading update, if I'm correct. How secure that is, I don't know. And how that's made up, we can only tell. So it's become a little bit of a punt at the moment for investors or traders who think that maybe they've written off everything and from now on things will be better. But it's got a value of 2 billion rand. That's nothing relative to where this was.
Yeah.
you know, I think this was a top 40 business not too long ago and quite high up.
Yeah, it really was. But it's, again, I keep on going on about this, but it's like a Dimension Data story. I mean, it's a mirror image of Dimension Data. It's still a good business, but it just fell by the wayside for different reasons. Dimension Data fell by the wayside because of what happened to the dot-com companies, and EOH has fallen by the wayside because of Microsoft.
They've probably got a lot of engineers down there that are competent people, programmers and people who can install systems and design things for you. I think the Microsoft license is important. Although, if I'm going to do something and they come and install it for me, they can do it. You know, in other words, if I buy Microsoft and ask them to come and help me install it, they'll do it or do whatever they have to do. But they themselves can't sell the license. So there's still issues around, and I think it's going to take some time. But it's the kind of stock that if you want to take a punt, if you want to take an option on their recovery, I suppose these are low levels that you're going to get. But there are a lot of our businesses that are in similar positions. Some of the big caps that have become very small caps. If you look at Omnia, has also gone through troubled times. Nampak's gone through troubled times.
I've heard some things about Omnia. I've heard some, these are mischievous rumors, but I've heard some things about Omnia that there could be some nasty news coming. But that's just chatter.
Well, the market's
chatter.
Telling you that. Hmm. You see, the market's discounting that. I mean, this is a share that's down this year about 37-38%. I think on a year it's down about 60%. So it's been under a lot of pressure, and it shouldn't be like that. They're businesses we believe are well run. So there might be areas within a business that are causing these kinds of rumors and talks. I'm not sure. They are up today. I see they're up about 6%. But that's been the nature, Lindsay. There's, you know, these companies get knocked and then they bounce off and come down again. Not easy to read them. But another one has been Nampak as well, who's been under severe pressure.
Yes.
In the year to date as well, I'm just looking here, down about 30% or 28-30%. That's a big move, you know, for businesses that I'm looking at Nampak. There's a value of about 6-7 billion. Here's a company that's been around for generations,
yes,
and was a leader in the industrial, you know, on the JSE's industrial market. It was always a bellwether for how consumption was doing, but they just haven't got right. And the price at which they're trading now is minor compared to where it was 10, 15, 20 odd years ago. It's just been in steady decline.
Well, this brings me to a point that that struck me earlier on today, and I put in a call to the JSE Limited, and in Maud Street, and I went through to the office of Nicky Newton-King, and I said, I want to have an interview about the future of the JSE, because it seems to me that the fabric of the JSE, the old companies like the Nampaks of this world that you've just spoken about, and Omnias, they've been there for forever, and they've done good business, and they still have good businesses. But it's as though those companies are falling by the wayside. We've got mining and manufacturing data coming out of the macro economy that suggests that mining and manufacturing companies will not do well over the next 6 to 12 months and maybe even beyond. So what is the future of the JSE? Because we don't have the companies like the Alibabas or the Disneys that are taking advantage of other areas of the economy. In other words, digital and online streaming, etc. So I'm very, very interested to see whether Nicky Newton-King comes back to me and talks to me about it. But I fear for the JSE.
No, I fear as well, but this is how we make a living. You know, while a lot of my business is now offshore, we can't ignore that a considerable amount of business has to remain here. Pension fund type money, provident fund, those that are trapped in those kind of vehicles, they're only allowed to take 30% offshore. So, yes, they can invest in cash and they can invest in property. But offshore, externalizing, only 30%. So 70% has to stay here. And for me, that's the big challenge of where do these companies make money? Where do they find, especially if it's a pension fund or a provident fund, you know, you've got third party. This is people's futures that you're dealing with, you know, their future, their savings, should I say, or their retirement savings. How do you do that? And Lindsay, all you have to do is look at the chart of the JSE over the last 4 to 5 years, it's gone nowhere. There's been a lot of fluctuations. You know, there's been a lot of movement up and down. But if you take one point, if you take a point 3 years, 5 years ago, and you look at it where it is today, you're pretty much in a straight line, or you pretty much move sideways. So there's been very little growth in the market over the last 5 years. I'm just looking at a chart on that, and I measured 22% because in 2014 we were at a low, so we started a low there. But 22% over 5 years is hardly 4% per annum. Yeah. You know, it's less than that. So if I go back only three or one, if I go back, I'll tell you now, if I go back 4 years, that figure becomes 8%. In other words, over the last 4 years, we're up about 8%, which is 2% per annum. You know, that's crazy. That's less than inflation.
But it's positive, and people say, well, at least it's going up. But on the other hand, have a look at inflation. So in real terms, it's going absolutely nowhere. The last time the market was so buoyant at the beginning of a year was 1987, the US market, that is, David. And then we know what happened in October of 1987. So is there any chance of that happening again? And also, please tell us what you were doing in 1987.
I remember in October 1987 was a very buoyant year because we had a lot of new listings. There were plenty of activity on our market.
Yes.
And it ran ahead of itself. It crashed because of there were no circuit breakers in some computer trading, and quickly recovered. But the markets were, of course, we had a bubble type, not necessarily bubble, but valuations were very, very stretched and extended, far greater than they are at the moment. You know, we're missing that, Lindsay. You know, when I go back to those booms of the, I came in the aftermath of 69, but when I, in 87 and various other periods along the way, certainly in the internet boom, you know, in 2000 and that, the public were very much involved. It was a talking point every day. Everybody wanted to get involved in the market. They wanted to put all their savings in the market. We haven't had that. We haven't had that for a decade.
No.
This has been a real drag of a bull market. Even now, since the beginning of the year, there hasn't been much conviction in this rise.
Don't you find it quite boring? Don't you find the whole thing quite boring, David? I mean, I'm not being nasty or anything, but you don't wake up in the morning and say, well, there's 1,000 stocks, let's have a look now.
No.
It's maybe 20 that you look at. It's so boring.
No. The worst. The absolute worst. It's on the JSE, even global markets, to an extent, there's some – they're markets that we watch. I look for themes, and I try and make it try and make it exciting, and there are a lot of areas that I'm watching. But on the JSE, it's hell. It's really, really difficult. Lindsay, I sent out a notice. I was looking for some papers yesterday, and I came across a Playboy magazine.
I saw that tweet of yours.
Did you see that tweet?
Yes, but please explain it.
I found this article. Yeah. I found an article that was written in 1995 by Arthur Goldstuck. And
from Worldwide Works.
Yeah. Arthur was he wrote. He's a
the tech
journalist.
Guy.
And he's a very good journalist.
He's excellent.
He'd written an article about the boys on the floor. This is on the trading floor, and it was schoolboy type stuff. You know, they were naughty, but not maliciously naughty. You know what I mean by that? They were fun kind of chaps, almost high school type humor, when I looked at it and I recalled, you know, what fun we used to have on the floor, it's gone. And today markets are significantly more efficient, and we do a lot more trade. Mm. But there was never a boring day there. It was never dull. And I miss the excitement of those days, even though the brokers are making a lot more money, and there's a lot more happening, and it's a lot more transparent than it used to be then. Yeah. But still, you're dead right. I mean, it's terribly, terribly boring here.
Oh dear.
If I look while we're talking now at the activity, you know, we're about 11 billion rand, 15% of which has been in Naspers, a little trade in MTN. But there's nothing sparkling. There's no talk, you know. There's nothing to get us going, to get us exciting today. When I go through the announcements, there's virtually
– There's nothing.
There's nothing. You know, there's nothing.
Well, yeah. Let's talk about something that is interesting, and it will be interesting for the next few weeks, and that's the political situation in South Africa. Mm. I noticed that they call Cristiano Ronaldo, don't they, CR7. What are we going to call Cyril Ramaphosa, CR-1 or something? Because he's promised 1 million homes in Alexandria. And I think over a certain period, I can't remember the numbers, but anyway, it was all over social media that he'll have to build 570 homes a day in order to fulfill what he said. And I'm very surprised that he succumbed to populism. It disturbs me somewhat.
Well, I suppose he's playing to his crowd, but that's a problem.
Lying, in other words,
he can't afford to do it. He can't afford to do that. You know, he's got to be realistic. He wants to be elected, and unfortunately, we all believe that once he's elected, then he'll move away from it. I doubt that's going to be happening. And to make those kind of promises, Lindsay, I promise you, you don't want to go through Alexandria. I went through with in a police car a couple of years ago after we had a robbery, and we were looking for my wife's car, and I was absolutely appalled and shaken by the state of the suburb there, and it needs a lot. And to be honest, it's something that should have been addressed a long time ago, because we've let those people down. You know, that they can live in that kind of poverty or under those conditions is appalling. So they do need the houses, but I mean, in order to do that, you need proper organization, and you need a lot of money. And I don't know whether we've got that. This is a country that needs to rethink, has to almost start at the beginning and rethink where it is. And Cyril can't fall back on populism as a means to get to where he wants. You know, he can't go to his backers and, in other words, seek investment outside and then come back and, you know, tell another story to the people here. Mm-hmm. You can't do that. I don't know. I think that there's a lot that needs to happen here. This is a country where, and you can, it's reflected in the market. Has to have a completely new plan, with new people, with new skills. I think we've got to move away from where we have been in the last 20, 25 years.
Okay, let's.
I'm talking economically. You know, which is a political move. We can't talk ideology. You know, it's just not going to get us through this. Hmm. We can worry about that later.
Yeah, it's almost as though 15 months down the line, since everyone was so enthusiastic about Mr. Ramaphosa, President Ramaphosa, suddenly he's just going, he's reverting back to the old ways, which is no good. Talking about reverting back to the old ways, Mr. Trump has said that the US Federal Reserve, if it had done its job properly, the stock market would be 5,000 to 10,000 points higher. What stock market he's talking about, I don't know. Maybe the Dow Jones. 31,000, 40,000 on the Dow or something. What is he talking about?
I don't know.
But have you seen his tweets about the Fed?
I know, he's mad. I mean,
completely mad.
What do you mean 5,000 to 10? What? Which points?
Yeah, which market? Which points? I mean, and why would you say that? Just because you've got so much debt that you need interest rates to stay low so you can service that debt. It's got nothing to do with you. And he's a dictator. He's becoming a dictator and becoming more of a dictator. And it's, again, very frightening. Politics frightens me. Well, Brexit, Ramaphosa, and Trump, they scare the hell out of me.
Well, he just bullies his way, making these kind of statements without any kind of repercussions or comeback. And not even his own party doesn't say a thing. No one even questions. Okay, well, tell us which 5,000. And poor old Jerome Powell, yes, he slipped up. You know, he slipped up in raising rates a little too fast. He's trying to undo it now. But still, he'll get it right. He's got the markets up again, and you know, I think they did realize that perhaps they'd pushed too hard, and there were reasons why. But he does not let up. He doesn't let up on his own people, on people that he appointed. And but you know what he's doing? He undermines his own institutions wherever. You know, all the institutions that have kept America going are being undermined by him. Anyway, that's Mr. Trump. I don't know what brand of presidency it is. I don't know how you explain it, but it's up to the Republicans actually to stop him and to actually contest him, but they don't want to. Just to say, it goes back to the same power thing. Nobody wants to give up their position or power.
Let's talk about happier things now, because there are three people I want to talk about who have amazed me over the last 36 hours. One is Mo Salah, the other one is Raheem Sterling, and the other one, of course, is Tiger Woods. Start with Tiger's. Yeah. We never speak about golf. I don't play golf. I can't stand golf unless it's the Ryder Cup or these big events. But what a comeback from that man. Well done to him. My goodness.
No, it was... In fact, I was either watching that or the Liverpool game, and Chelsea was so terribly poor that I turned to...
Well, they nearly equalised. Eden Hazard nearly pulled it back.
You're relying on one man. You can't build a team around one man without any kind of support. Mm. They came up there. They just looked absolutely awful. And after Liverpool, I missed the Mo Salah game, because as they scored, I said, okay, they'll never come back. And I turned to the golf, because I'd been half watching the golf. Mm. And that was great. I mean, there were five or six, even more, I think, contenders for the green jacket.
There were.
And he held his nerve. He was brilliant.
Yeah, and he wore the same clothes that he did the last time he won it. It was an absolute fantasy. And you see Nike's stock is up 1% at the moment in New York because of the sponsorship of Tiger Woods. So he moves markets as well as moves emotions. It was an incredible story.
No, it was. And, you know, to come back after such a long layoff and at such a brilliant venue. But you know the other thing? I'm telling you, Liverpool are going to take this. I'm not a Liverpool fan.
Don't say that.
I know.
Have you seen the run-in there? Of course, Manchester City have got a more difficult run-in. They've got to play Man
United.
They're
looking. Yeah, they look tired and stretched. And they don't look as sharp as they did. De Bruyne and these chaps are not. Remember when they attacked, you had these three forces that came up, or three or four people that just ran at you. Mm. And they just demolished teams. They're nowhere near that. And Liverpool are very, very strong. And they're strong at the back. And I think that's where their strength is. But I hate to say it, but I think they're going to do it.
Oh, goodness. No. I disagree. We'll have a private bet off air.
I'm not going to talk soccer for a year, because there's nothing worse than Liverpool supporters.
Yes, there is. Manchester United supporters. No, Manchester United supporters are far worse than Liverpool supporters. Come on now. Just have a look at the Mo Salah goal. You know what? Mo Salah has become a little bit too fancy. He's becoming. He's trying to become too much of a Messi. He got that ball and he said to himself, you know, stuff this. I'm just going to whack it. And he whacked it. And you couldn't stop it. I mean, you could have had three goalkeepers in that goal. And you had no way that was going to come out. So well done to him. I hope he finds his freedom now.
I know. He's tried it. He's tried that same move for about over the last 10 matches without success. So one had to come off. But
okay, so it's Liverpool to take the title. Manchester City to fall second and only win the League Cup or something. They'll lose the FA Cup.
I think they're going to lose a whole lot.
Oh, no, don't say that. Poor Pep. Okay, David Shapiro, thank you very much for your time this evening. It's David Shapiro. That was Shapiro World. And same time next week. That podcast was proudly brought to you in association with sharenet.co.za.